Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is sponsored by Bombas Socks. Are you tired of just going to the store and buying socks? I mean, face it, over many decades, our shoes have improved, the technology, the comfort, the styles, shoes have improved. Socks have been very stagnant. Well, Bombas set out to be a game changer. They're designed to feel and fit better than any other sock you've ever worn. I wear Bombas socks, and they're amazing. Now, if you wear the calf style, they're not going to slide down on you. If you wear the ankle style, they're actually designed to prevent your shoe from rubbing on your heel. They have no toe seam, they have arch support, and they use extra long staple cotton, which means that if it's warm out, the socks will keep you cooler. And if it's cold out, they'll keep you warmer. It's just amazing. So the result is a more comfortable, quality-made, and better-fitting sock than anything else you have ever worn. You need to try these socks. They have a guarantee. If you don't like the socks after you've purchased them, they will take them back. They will refund your money. You can save 20% on your first order if you visit bombas.com/GenY. That's bombas.com/GenY. Once you get there, use discount code GenYGET20 and you'll save 20% off your purchase. Just go to bombas.com/GenY.
What happened? First, a car fire at the construction site. One unit responded, noticed a fire in an adjacent building, called for backup. A couple of more units came. As they were fighting that fire, there was a tremendous explosion. This is a major construction site. They're building the Crosstown Expressway up here, and all kinds of equipment, all kinds of explosives.
They're angry because they know it was a crime. They smelled arson from the very beginning.
The police have my statement. I'm talking to you right now. Now letting the system take care of it.
We always felt they did a great job investigating this.
Additional people, other than the five people in prison, were also responsible for the crime, according to our investigation, but were never prosecuted.
This is one of the biggest, longest unsolved crimes in Kansas City.
Welcome to the Generation Y podcast. For this, our second part in our Kansas City Firefighters case series, we spoke with a couple of retired Kansas City firefighters. They are brothers, and they know a lot about what went down in 1988 and what has changed for the departments since the incident in question.
I'm a retired Kansas City, Missouri firefighter. I'm also a I guess you could say I'm a retired Kansas City, Missouri fire inspector now also. I worked 28 plus years in the field and 12 plus years in the fire marshal's office starting almost immediately after I retired.
I'm a retired captain from the fire department, Kansas City, Missouri, and I've been asked to talk about the explosion that took place in 1988 and killed six of our members.
They sent out two different trucks, am I right? 30 and 41?
Those are Kansas City, Missouri Fire Department pumper companies. 41 and 30s were both pumper companies, consisting of a captain, a driver, and a firefighter.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's, we got like 32 pumpers, I believe, in service around the city. That's just a normal call. They sent out one unit to respond initially on a vehicle fire, I believe, and they called for help because they only have 500 gallons of water and they needed extra water. There's no plugs up there on the construction site. So, and the second pumper came and met them and helped them with the scene.
If you could, please give us a rundown of what the fire department's response was to these fires at the construction site that morning.
Okay, my recollection of the morning of and then the preceding day is sort of like this. I was at home asleep. I lived at 2 East 99th, which is, as the crow flies, probably 2.5, maybe 3 miles from the explosion. The explosion rocked me out of bed, kind of rattled and shook my house. And of course, it woke me up. Well, I thought, wonder what that was. Kind of went back to sleep, not real good sleep, because I had to go to work the next morning, which wasn't too many hours from then. I heard 36 pumper leave the engine house up at the corner of 95th and Holmes, and they hadn't been gone all that long, it didn't seem like, but I might have drifted in and out of sleep when the second explosion happened, and that one almost ripped the back screen door off my back deck, and it knocked an open viewing window out of my racquetball court down into the court. There was that much shockwave south and west of where the explosion happened. Well, since I had to go to work the next morning, that was it. I got up, got dressed, and went to my station, which I was a captain on 9 truck at the time at 5005 Swope Parkway. And as I walked in the door, the radio, they were still pumper 41, pumper 30, respond. And we just heard that for the next half hour, 45 minutes, knowing probably they weren't going to respond.
Did you hear the explosions that morning?
I live up north of the river, and it didn't wake me up. Someone called me that morning to make sure I wasn't involved, that I knew, and got up and turned the TV on and started watching. So I got informed like the public did, basically.
That second explosion was especially devastating. When an event like this occurs, do they start rounding up all firefighters in the area to respond, or how does that work? What do the departments do to respond?
Well, they sent more companies out there after the first and second explosion. They sent 36s after the first, but the guys, you know, they stayed back. Nobody else got hurt, and they took it very slow after that. I believe they got the police out with a helicopter and overflew it. And one of our chiefs, I believe, finally went up there. I think his name was Billy Booth, if I remember right. And he went up and scouted it out from a distance finally. But they were cautious and because they didn't know if there was going to be more explosions. And the companies just went out there unknowingly and drove right into it. They didn't realize the explosives were on fire, and they weren't, we don't know for sure, but they probably weren't marked correctly like they are now. But the law has changed after that event and changed a lot to prevent this from happening again.
It's not near as dangerous. It's still very, very dangerous. But what we learned from the explosion has taken a wee bit of the danger out of the job for us. we're now more aware of what could happen. We're still learning all the time. We just lost two guys here within the last few months from a building collapse.
And they were outside. They had cleared the building, and they just were too close. I mean, over there where they're at, it's a narrow alley and tight spaces, and they were setting up, and they were 10 feet too close is all, and it got them. So it's dangerous, but and that'll teach them. That incident's going to make changes on the department too. It always does.
Being a firefighter is a very dangerous job, but you have your training and you have your equipment. And so long as you have those two things, you can minimize risk, correct?
Correct. It minimizes. You're never going to take the element of surprise or the unknown out of the equation. But the more you can pre-plan, pre-prepare, and know about a potential situation that could develop, knowing what you might be running into gives you a better chance for taking everybody home with you when it's over. That's the most important thing. Oh, yeah, the mindset of all the people on the job. We'd get a fire, especially something like a truck fire on the highway. We wouldn't think about what was in the truck or what was in the building. It's on fire. Let's go get it. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. This was like a wide awake eye opener for us. Maybe we've been doing it wrong all these years. Maybe we need to figure out what's going on here before we get up too close. And more than anything, I think that mindset has changed the way we do business. The explosion helped foster us for getting hazmat, getting the regulations in place through the legal channels to regulate storage of blasting agents and monitor blasting sites. All that kind of stuff slowly crept into our culture, but only because of this incident. I'm not saying it wouldn't eventually have happened, but probably not as quickly as it did after losing the six guys.
For the first couple of years right after the explosion, I don't want to say it was irritating from my perspective sometimes, but you'd roll up and they were very cautious. I remember several accidents at night. You can't see very well and unknown what the cargo is, and they were on to air on the high side of safety. But over time, you know, we started operating a little more normal, but we were pretty skittish in the beginning after this happened, for sure, on certain calls that, like I said, in transportation of product that you didn't know what it was and you couldn't tell it when you first got there. You took extra caution.
We know that the explosions happened because of blasting agents known as ANFO were on site and had caught fire. Could you tell us more about what ANFO is and what it's used for?
Well, when you're on a construction site and you've got lots of rock to get rid of, either to put sewer lines in, put a roadway in, that's the agent used. And they get the drilling engineers in there and they decide how deep to drill, how close together the holes go. And then these cardboard tubes that are filled with this ANFO get pushed down into these holes after they're drilled, and it's all wired either for a one-time shot or it shoots it off in a series like a stair step. You know, it starts at one end and goes to the other, and this breaks up the rock, and then the heavy equipment can come in and move the rock. But in those days, companies just did that. I don't believe we had any permit apparatus in effect through the fire department or any other city entity to regulate that. We could have, but if we did, I didn't know about it. Now, nowadays, if there's going to be any kind of blasting, any kind of agent on the scene, any kind of blasting, and the agent comes during the day, whatever, they have to get permits through the Kansas City, Missouri Fire Department, we have to send trained individuals out to these blasting sites to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. If, in fact, they shoot out of a day box and they don't ever store agent or blasting caps on scene, they don't have to have magazines. However, if they store a little bit of both for overnight, so the next morning they can continue to work while the next day's supply of both arrive, those magazines are regulated. The blasting agent and the detonators have to be a certain distance apart. They have to be in these heavily constructed magazines, fenced and bermed on three sides to kind of keep them out of view. And we keep track of this. I've been on site for many, many blasts over that 12-year period, and we never had a problem. This was a very unique thing that happened out there on 71 Highway. However, as a fire department, we didn't have the expertise. We didn't have the knowledge that we have now because of this incident to know that we were deeply, deeply into harm's way. I don't believe something like that would ever happen again in this city unless it was a terrorist thing designed specifically to undermine our safety protocols, etc., prior to an explosion, something like happened in Oklahoma City.
So when something like this occurs, who's in charge? Is this under the jurisdiction of the fire department, or do the police need to be called in because this appears to be a criminal act?
Oh, they had the police arson on the phone after the first explosion. I mean, I'm sure that was that dispatch probably just took that on themselves. You gotta understand, it wasn't a command scene yet because they had a single pumper, then two pumpers, and so a chief hadn't been dispatched till after this. Before the second explosion, he'd just gotten there, and he was not. Thankfully, he wasn't close enough to get hurt, but it damaged the buggy he was in, the car. So after that, it just became it became a process. I mean, I know they all assumed they were dead, but they wanted to make sure. But they were cautious, so it took a little bit of time to get up there and poke around. And then after that, it's, you know, they had to let the police come in and do an investigation. And it's a crime scene. It's a six murders, basically, is how they looked at it.
Highest ranking chief that's on scene can choose to take control from whoever was the highest ranking chief or deputy chief. Yeah, we've done a lot more with the incident command system than what we had in place back then, and all that, including our hazmat team, was brought about by this particular incident. The feds were involved by mid-morning, I believe. ATF was coming in. I don't know if the FBI was involved, but I know the ATF was. Once the bigger players get there, we kind of take a back seat to that because they have the expertise and we obviously don't.
Don't have the expertise? What do you mean by you don't have the expertise? Expertise in what?
Forensics.
The investigation.
Yeah, the investigation. We don't have the forensics or the forensics capability that the police department or the ATF have.
I mean, the nuts and bolts of the firefighting end of it was over with the explosions. I don't believe we ever put another drop of water on the scene. I think it blew everything out when it blew up that bad. And like I said, they did not go up in there for several hours. Then they were real cautious. And then when they did, it was devastation. I mean, it's obvious. So it became a crime scene. And to this day, after life safety issues are addressed at a shooting or whatever it might be, they make us get out. The police take over. And I've been called back to crime scenes hours later, and they make copies. They take a print of my boot. You got to stand on a paper, and the crime scene gals get your boot prints, and they want to know if you had your hands off, your gloves off, leaving fingerprints, and they try to account for us in the crime scene. And But they make us get back and get out because it's their scene. It's a crime scene then, after the life safety issues are over handled.
Is anyone at the fire department consulted, since this is a case of arson? After all, firefighters are experts in fire. Or do the police not consult with the fire department in a case like this?
Back then, our fire investigating branch was not as advanced as it is now, and the police were definitely the lead agency in all arsons, and probably still are because they got to build a criminal case.
A lot of times the police have to defer to ATF, even to this day. ATF will come in and take charge, depending on the circumstances. If it's a cut-and-dried arson fire that kills somebody, the police know for sure. But if we got multiple victims, other extenuating circumstances, ATF will get involved. I mean, it's just the way it is. And once ATF gets involved, they are the lead agency. Just like the JJ's natural gas explosion and fire here a few years ago, the ATF ended up mitigating that, along with the Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. We were sort of sideline players, providing background information on what we did and what happened.
So if this site is a crime scene, does that mean that the firefighters need to leave?
Oh, no, no. We had personnel on the scene throughout the whole initial process, and, the grisly task, I wasn't out there, but there was only one open casket, I believe, at the whole of all six of them.
That was Gene.
And that was Gene Hurd. And he was not that great a shape either. So, but we were involved in that, and we stayed. It's not like they tell us to go home, but you got to understand, when it becomes a crime scene, you can't mess up the crime scene. I mean, we're not investigators for crime. You know, they got procedures they got to follow if you want to convict people and get them for these crimes. So,
did you personally know the men who lost their lives that day at the construction site?
No, I know their names. I knew them all, some better than others. You had a whole conglomerate of guys. You had older captains. Both of them had been on quite a while. Captain Halloran had been on probably longer than Jim Kilventon. I'm guessing, maybe not. The drivers, mid-career guys, and the firefighters were in early stages of their career. All decent guys, all good captains.
Another real sad result of this concerned one of the drivers, McCarnan. His wife and him chose to live outside the city of Kansas City, and they got what was deemed a divorce of convenience. And as a result of that, the widow received no money from the explosion. The children got benefits till they turned 18. But after that, it was cut off. So it was a devastating financial hit to that family also, because they chose to do what they did. But the boy, his son did become a fireman and still is on the job.
And the list I have here is Captain Gerald Halloran, who is 59, Captain James Kilventon, 54, Firefighter Thomas Fry, 41, Luther Hurd, 31, Robert McCarnan, 42, and Michael Oldham, 32.
Prior to leaving the downtown area, I worked with Luther at Station 10 before he went over to 23s. The rest of them, I worked around them after I got out there on 9 truck, because 30s was in our district, and 41s was an adjoining district, and we often, ran in with them, on an overtime day, something like that, because they were not my shift. I was A shift, and they were C shift.
Another little side story is I know the other firefighter that was on 41s. He was what was called on end day that day, so he didn't go to work. You get a day off once a month. We work 50 hours a week, and if you didn't get that day a month off, you'd work, I don't know, what would it be? You'd work 72. It's a lot more hours, so to keep the hours down, you get one day off a month extra. And so he came back to work the next shift by himself. His whole crew was gone. So he had to deal with that then.
With these two fire departments losing so many firemen in one day, what do they do? They need to have firefighters available the next day. And from then on,
to cover the shifts the next day or the rest of that day, they hired, I'm sure they had to get reserve rigs and put them in service and probably hired personnel overtime. I mean, there's not that many surplus guys on the job. The job's usually down to the nitty-gritty to man it every day. There's not a lot of extra people. They hired people to work the overtime, and then they had to they promoted. It helped. It actually got me made driver earlier because we lost two men. They had to replace them, and I was on the driver's list at the time, and it got me promoted right away. Oh, I would have had to wait just a little while longer. It was just two spots sooner, but I might have had to wait another 6 or 8 months because people don't retire all the time. They usually retire at the end of the year. So, and this was in towards November, and then we had our retirements at the same time. So it just added, unfortunately, two more spots to be filled.
Wrong a minute ago. Those guys were B shift. I was C shift. We were coming on that morning. They weren't A shift.
And what are those shifts typically like? What time do they run? From what time to what time?
7 in the morning to 7 the next morning. But generally, if you work at a decent station, guys come to work at 6 in the morning. You know, they come in early. But shift change happened at 7 a.m. You worked 24 hours.
So there's a little bit of overlap?
No overlap. When your man came in to relieve you, you'd go home. That's how it happened. That's how it happens to this day.
Now, Kansas City has lost 6 firefighters. What can you tell us about the funerals? Did they all happen at once, or were they separate? What do you know about the funeral services for these fallen firefighters?
They had to dust off the funerals because it had been quite a while since they had lost someone. I think, I can't remember his name. Was it the guy that got killed on the ladder truck up north of the river, or was it the guy that the cornice fell off and hit him? A walker. I forget the last.
It was, Dale Walker. It was out in the street and there east of New Tens that night. Dale Walker, when the plumbing supply store blew up and killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Dale was the last one.
So, but they got a book. I mean, the policies and stuff, how they do it, and I've never been involved in that, but the department comes together and the funerals, they let the families have the actual funeral, but they transported all of them, I believe, on the fire trucks and had a procession for them. And I think we had 6 individual funerals, and they had a big mass one out of respect at Arrowhead Stadium to honor all of them. And departments from all over the country come in on this sort of thing. New York sends people, L.A., Boston, little towns. There's hundreds of other fire departments that will send people to represent them when something like this happens. And Kansas City sends people when they have a tragedy in another state, you know, in another city. We will send our color guard or members up to represent the Kansas City Fire Department at their funeral.
Did you attend the funeral service for the firefighters at Arrowhead Stadium?
Yes, I went to Arrowhead. My wife went to Arrowhead. It was a very compelling event. I'll never forget it.
I was working. I was on the fire department. I was on the job. I had to work that day, so I did not go.
Years and years later, I was a junior battalion chief, and we had 6 brothers get killed in Worcester, Massachusetts at a warehouse fire. Well, I don't know how it all came about, but our color guard got picked to be one of the lead color guards at this funeral. And since I was a junior BC, I was ordered or asked if I would chaperone our color guards to this event in Worcester. And it brought back a lot of memories. They lost 6 and we lost 6.
How do you think the investigation into this crime went? Do you have confidence that the right people were arrested and convicted in this crime?
I'll give you my perspective as a fireman. I was a fireman when this happened, and I just retired a few years ago. And I'd say the job in general is very confident they got the right people that did this. I mean, we always felt they did a great job investigating this, and I do not believe there was any mistake done in the prosecution of these people. They were just covering up a theft and started a fire. They had no idea what they were doing or the consequences of what their actions were going to be.
So you listened to what they had to say.
Yeah.
I mean, do we have anything we want to add to it?
I guess I just want, I didn't know how far reaching this event was. I didn't understand that this explosion, the death of these six firefighters, impacted and rippled out across the nation and changed the way a lot of firefighters do their job and the way a lot of training and how they react to fires and even regulations on placards and other things, how far-reaching this whole event was.
I know we like to think, well, this is a local case, but it had far-reaching implications, and not just in the turnout for the funerals from fire departments across the nation, but in, like you said, in how they approach fires, whether it's at a construction site or even a car fire. There's more caution now. I think before you got the sense that, well, they have their hoses and they'll get in there and they'll stop the fire. Well, this changed everything. You don't look at it as just a simple fire that you can put out. Now their lives could be in real danger. They have no idea what's behind the fire. They don't know if it's just something that's going to burn or something that's going to blow up in their faces.
I actually spoke to another firefighter outside of this, and he just gave me just a really quick thing. He goes, "Do you have firearms in your house?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, "Do you keep a round chambered?" And I said, "Yes." And he goes, "Because when your house is on fire and that gun heats up, that chambered round is going to shoot. It's going to cook off." And he goes, "So maybe don't chamber a round." So little things like that, that I had no concept of. And here, this is a big deal with the blasting agents. They have to, I mean, if just a mere handgun in a house changes the way they do business, imagine how a whole trailer full of, not explosive, but blasting agents is now approached and how all of those things are dealt with. Another thing that I thought was very telling was their emotion and how they felt about this case. And it's not until the very end when they give you that final thought about the investigation. And it's a very black and white sort of attitude and personality. And there's not a lot of room for nuance there. And again, I feel their passion. I absolutely do not have sympathy for anyone that starts a fire and causes loss of life. And to me, they can go sit in prison for the rest of their life if they think arson's a game or something. Setting a fire with the intention of, malice, that's arson. And if a firefighter loses their life, I do believe that is at least second degree murder, manslaughter. You need to be charged with that. As far as first degree, that's a little debatable. When you were you setting the fire with the intention of killing somebody, or did you set the fire and because of the fire, it caused loss of life, including that of firemen? The intention isn't there, but I still don't have much sympathy for you as far as your actions led to this death.
Yeah, I think one of the things that comes up here is if you're setting a fire, and some of these things can be pretty big fires, the fire department's going to be called. They will send firefighters to stop the fire.
Putting their lives online.
You've invited them to the scene. You've set bait for them.
Yeah.
So by setting an arson fire that results in the loss of life, I agree. It doesn't matter that you didn't go out that day thinking, oh, I want to kill several people today. By setting the fires, by committing arson, you are putting people's lives in danger. So you are responsible. And whether you want to call that second degree or what have you, it's still murder. Your actions killed people. So I totally understand that point of view. Right, the firefighters definitely feel as though the right people are locked up, and which spurred me to ask, have you looked into the investigation? And to their credit, they do know some of the people who were arrested, so they know those people well enough to speak to their past, to speak to their criminal past. And so I think that helps them when they respond to me and say, oh, they definitely got the right people. They're confident because they know those people. They know what kind of business they were involved with back then. So I think if we had been talking about people who didn't have a past, it would be more difficult for them to say that. But I think it's not just someone had to pay for what happened, but they know some of those people and say, those kinds of people are absolutely the kind of people who would do something like this.
And it's true. They had a very checkered past, and they were not good people. And a lot of their neighbors and family and friends were probably happy to see them go away.
But again, we're talking about five people here, and they knew some of them. They felt confident in saying, sure, these are probably the people that did it. And so the investigators did their job. The court did its job. And there were five convictions, and that's the end of the story, as far as they're concerned.
And I would feel the same way.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.